It's good to be with you today. I'm so excited. We always look forward to our opportunity to come back and be with Victory. I think we've done this in October just about every time, and we're thrilled to be here. It's funny how things have changed since we first started coming. I think the first time we came to Victory, Cooper was probably two or three. He's eight now. Quinn was about, I don't know, somewhere around that big, something like that. She was pretty small, and now she's in here with us today. Cooper's in here with us today. Beckham is still being contained at the moment. I hope he's being contained at the moment back in the back. He's a good kid, but he can tear some stuff up. So he's back there and being good. But we are so glad to be able to be with you here today and just to be able to share with our work with you that you've been partnering with us for the past 5 years tonight. But this morning I want to preach. Is that okay with y'all? Good, because that's what's going to happen. Glad we're all on the same page. But I do want to thank you for being with us. I talk to a lot of missionaries, a lot of church planters, and they don't all have the ability to say what I say whenever I brag about my sending church. I know that at the end of the day, you are with us, and I'm so grateful that God has given you us, that we've got you as a sending church, however the pronouns work out there. So I'm grateful for that, but now I want to preach. All right, let's take a moment and pray. Our Heavenly Father, we come before you and we thank you so much for giving us a chance to be able to be together and look at your word. Be with us as we go forward through the rest of this service. Just allow me to move out of the way and I'll let the service be focused on you and not on me. Please give me words that will impact those that are listening today. And please be with the Spirit. Let the Spirit be with each one here today. That when I mess up, when I make mistakes, that you correct those. And I know each of us have different circumstances and different things going on today, but I ask that you would apply the words to each of us individually as we need to hear them. Thank you so much for giving us the opportunity, and I ask that you would bless our services today. It's in Jesus' name I pray these things, Lord. Amen. Now, we're going to look today at John chapter 4. And if you're familiar with John chapter 4, you probably know this is the story of the woman at the well. But I have a couple of points of contention with that. First of all, it's about Jesus, so we're going to call it the man at the well. And second of all, he was there first. She got there after him. So we're going to be looking today at the man that was at the well. Now, it would be really helpful for my sermon today if Brittany, whenever she had been pregnant, had had some weird cravings, but she didn't. And that's very disappointing to me. We're not going to try again. But she didn't have any. But, you know, we're done. Three's plenty. We deal with cravings all the time. I don't know about you. See, we've got a much smaller church. And so I can ask them questions like, what was your weirdest craving? And that can easily move me into that. But I can't do that here. But when you're dealing with cravings, like, you get some weird stuff happens, right? You know, you got the stereotypical craving when a woman's pregnant. What's the stereotypical craving when a woman's pregnant? Pickles and ice cream. I don't know why we've all latched onto that, but we as a culture have latched onto that as the stereotypical pregnancy craving. Anybody seen the weird craving shows on TV, like people eat mattresses and dirt and stuff like that? Anybody seen that? You admit that in the middle of the night, you've been up surfing channels and you've seen it. Somebody's going to admit that. Like our bodies crave things, right? And they tell us that's usually it can be a really good thing. For me, I have some sugar issues. It's not a big deal, but I have some sugar issues. And my body makes it really clear to me when I need some more sugar. My body makes it really clear to me when I'm having an issue, right? And I need to deal with that. Anybody experience something like that? Your body lets you know what's going on real quickly. The problem is that you look at those cravings and say, well, yeah, you crave, you know, some apple juice because your sugar's dropping off and you know you need to do that. But I crave a donut, and that's not necessarily helpful. I have the same donut craving. The problem is God created a system of cravings within us that would lead us to things that we need. And that was supposed to be a good thing. It was a system of cravings. Like you're hungry, so you know you need to go eat. Your sugar drops, you know you need to go get something. You start to crave red meat, you know you need some iron. And that was all fine and good until that system was introduced into a world full of sin. It wasn't supposed to be there. It wasn't supposed to be difficult to figure out what you actually needed when it came time for craving. There wasn't supposed to be a donut option, right, in the Garden of Eden that this was going to be a problem. But we have taken what was a system of cravings, whether it's physical cravings or whether it's emotional cravings, spiritual cravings, and We have taken those things and introduced them into a sinful world. And what was supposed to lead us towards our Creator and good things made for us has now been twisted into something that lead us to sinful, harmful things. The biggest example I can think of about why God would put this system of cravings into us is Jurassic Park. We've got some Jurassic Park fans in here. I'm not talking about Jurassic World stuff. I'm talking about Jurassic, like the original Raptors in the Kitchen, Jurassic Park. Right? Lance, have you read? Yeah, you're with me. You read the book, right? Yeah, absolutely you read the book. Because that's, I can count on Lance for that. Michael Crichton is where it's at. It's good stuff. But in the movie and in the book, the better book, Jurassic Park, there's a way that they're going to control the dinosaurs. They're going to keep the dinosaurs from going out, getting out of control. They put a protein that they have to have in them. They create a need in them. And the only way that need can be fulfilled is if they go back to their creators to have that need met. It's a lysine deficiency they have. They can't produce it in themselves. They can't find it in nature. And so they will always be driven back to their creator to get that thing that they cannot produce on their own. And I'm not going to carry that metaphor any farther because it gets weird if you do that. But God has done the same thing in us. God has built a system of cravings in us that are supposed to lead us back to Him. But because we live in a fallen world, those cravings have gone crazy, and we just crave all kinds of stuff that will destroy us. And we're going to talk more about this in a minute. But we're going to look today at the story of a woman who had just been doing what her body told her to do. She had just been going where her cravings had led her, and it had left her broken. It had left her lonely. And in the eyes of society, it left her without value. And I want to see Jesus' response to that. We're going to look at John chapter 4, starting in verse 5. So he, that's Jesus, came to a city of Samaria, which is called Sychar, near the plot of ground that Jacob gave to his son Joseph. There's like 7 sermons we could preach out of this. We're only going to preach one, so I'm not going to catch every little crumb. Now, Jacob's well was there. Jesus, therefore, being wearied from his journey, sat thus by the well. It was about the 6th hour. So Jesus has left Jerusalem because people are trying to kill him there. He said, I'm not going to deal with this right now. So he's left Jerusalem. He decided to take a different route to get to where he was going, and he ended up in a city of Samaria where Jews didn't go. Okay? It's hot. It's about noon. He's tired. He sits down in the well. So who was at the well first? Jesus. So, man at the well. All right. A woman of Samaria came near to draw water, and Jesus said to her, give me a drink. For his disciples had gone away into the city to buy food. Then the woman of Samaria said to him, how is it that you, being a Jew, ask a drink from me, a Samaritan woman? For Jews have no dealings with the Samaritans. Jesus answered and said to her, if you knew the gift of God and who it is that says to you, give me a drink, you would have asked him and he would have given you living water. The woman said to him, sir, you have nothing to draw with and the well is deep. Where then do you get that living water? Are you greater than our father Jacob, who gave us the well and drank from it himself as well as his sons and livestock? Jesus answered and said to her, whoever drinks of this water will thirst again. But whoever drinks of the water that I shall give him will never thirst. But the water that I shall give him will become in him a fountain of water springing up into everlasting life. The woman said to him, sir, give me this water that I may not thirst, nor come here to draw. And Jesus said to her, go, call your husband and come here. And the woman answered and said, I have no husband. Jesus said to her, you have well said, I have no husband, for you have had 5 husbands, and the one you whom you now have is not your husband. In that you spoke truly. The woman said to her, sir, I perceive that you are a prophet. Our fathers worshipped on this mountain, and you say that in Jerusalem is the place where one ought to worship. Jesus said to her, woman, believe me, the hour is coming when you will neither on this mountain nor in Jerusalem worship the Father. You worship what you do not know. We know what we worship, for salvation is of the Jews. But the hour is coming, and now is, when the true worshipers will worship the Father in spirit and in truth. For the Father is seeking such to worship Him. God is spirit, and those who worship Him must worship Him in spirit and in truth. The woman said to Him, I know it's been a long time, we're almost done. The woman said to Him, I know that Messiah is coming, who is called Christ. When He comes, He will tell us all things. And Jesus said to her, I that speak to you am he. Now, Jesus comes up to this woman, she comes up to him. He talks to her, and they end up getting in a super deep conversation that you don't really have with strangers at the watering hole, right? This is a situation where he gets really deep into this, and there's a lot to pull out here. But I want to focus on this one phrase that Jesus used here in verse 10. Jesus answered and said to her, "If you knew the gift of God and who it is that says to you, 'Give me a drink,' you would have asked him, and he would have given you living water." Now, a lot of times people will teach about this and they'll say, well, Jesus was sitting next to a well and he's trying to get salvation, so he just came up with a clever little metaphor so he could get from well to salvation. And we just need to make sure that we're full of clever little metaphors to get from, you know, wherever we're at to wherever we're trying to get to. But that's not actually what Jesus did. See, Jesus was quoting from Jeremiah chapter 2. And in Jeremiah, it's kind of a depressing book. I don't know if you've read Jeremiah lately. He's called the weeping prophet for a reason. But in the book of Jeremiah, what's gone on is up to this point, Israel has just been rebelling against God. They're worshiping idols. They're treating orphans badly. They're treating widows badly. They're distorting justice. They're allowing rich people to get off with bribes instead of actually paying for their crimes. And it's just really, really bad. And Jeremiah is sent basically to preside over their doom. He's constantly telling them what they're doing wrong. They're not listening to him. Everything he says happens. And it's really set up so that at the end of the day, they will know that God was right. But at the beginning of Jeremiah, really in chapter 2 of Jeremiah, chapter verse 13, God says that there are two sins that his people have committed. And he doesn't address idolatry. He doesn't address the injustice. He doesn't address the way that they're manipulating the courts. He doesn't address any of that. What he addresses is this. He says in Jeremiah chapter 2, verse 13, "My people have committed two evils. Everything that they've done that's going to cause me to allow this nation to be destroyed, carried off into another country, and stay there for 70 years before they finally get humbled and come back. Everything that they've done can be summed up in two things that they've done, they've committed against me. Two sins. My people have committed two evils. Everything comes down to these two things. They have forsaken me, the fountain of living waters, and hewn themselves cisterns, broken cisterns, that can hold no water." And when Jesus says to the woman that shows up to the well that he's already sitting at, whenever he says to the woman, "If you knew who I was, you would have asked, and I would have given you living water," he's not just making up a metaphor. He's quoting Jeremiah. Because this woman is dealing with the same issues that the people of the nation of Judah was dealing with when God had to destroy them. And honestly, she's dealing with the same things that you're dealing with and the same thing that I'm dealing with. And you say, well, I haven't had five husbands. I'm a guy. I haven't had any husbands. But all of your sin can be traced back to these two things. You have forsaken the fountain of living waters and have hewn for yourself cisterns, broken cisterns that can hold no water. And you say, well, that's very profound. No idea what that means, but very, very good words. What is he talking about here? I want to talk about the difference with this. When he says fountain, like for what comes to mind for me is like I'm thinking some ornate European fountain that's shooting up. You know, it's something really, it's got a naked baby or something at the top and shooting out water. That's what I'm thinking of. But that's not what we're talking about here. We're talking about a spring. Anybody have a spring well water, anything like that? Are you all city water people? No? See, I grew up in Colombia. We don't have well water. But I grew up drinking well water. It was out of a spring and it was good. Like we had a good well. And I didn't realize that not everybody had a good well, so I got a little bit older and they're like, "Oh, we have well water. You want to drink that?" And I'm like, "I love well water." I'm like, "No, this is terrible." I didn't realize we had an especially good one. But there's a difference. You know, you've got that and the water's just, it's fresh and it's clean. And it's constant. And that's what we're talking about here. We're not talking about a fountain. We're not talking about a big concrete thing shooting up water into the air. We're talking about something that produces water without help from an outside source. And so what he's saying, what God is saying here in Jeremiah chapter 2, he's saying, I am a spring of water, and you have chosen, instead of drinking directly from me, you have chosen to drink from a cistern. Now, anybody have a cistern? Anybody ever deal with a cistern? Those are gross, right? A cistern is a hole in the ground. And water comes into it from somewhere. Whether you haul water to it, whether it collects water from the rain, whether it just soaks up water from the ground. And it's a place where you don't have springs, you have cisterns. Anybody ever noticed the names along the side of the Oklahoma-Arkansas border? Anybody ever paid attention to them? On the Arkansas side of the Arkansas-Oklahoma border, you have towns like Siloam Springs, or Sulphur Springs, or Cedar Springs. But what do you have on the Oklahoma side? You got still water, right? No water. Why didn't we live on the other side of the line? Water. You know, there's a difference between those two, because a cistern can get gross real fast. A spring is self-sustaining. A spring is constantly coming up. It's constantly moving. It's fresh. It's cold. It stays clean. And then we get into spiritual applications. But the cistern, though, is a hole in the ground where water seeps in or you haul water to it. It produces nothing of itself. And it pollutes its contents. We had a cistern at the house, one of the houses I grew up in, and we had a bunch of cats go missing. And then we found them. And I don't want to go farther than that. But it was one of the grossest things I've ever experienced. But that's what a cistern does. It catches the germs. It catches the pollutants. It catches whatever's around. And it takes what was fresh and what was clean and what was good, and it poisons it. It makes it dirty. And what he said is, I have a fresh supply of water. But what you people do is you don't want to drink directly from me. So what you do is you come over here, as far away from me as you can get, and you dig a hole in the ground. And you think, look at our wonderful hole in the ground. Let's go over here and take just a little bit of what we want out of this spring, and then we'll carry it back over here, and we'll dump it in our hole in the ground, so that we can have what we want from that, without having to deal with that. See, God has built into you cravings, but those cravings were designed to lead you back to your Creator. But God says, no, 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 what you have done is you have rejected me, and all you want is what you want from me without taking all of me. See, when we move on to the spiritual metaphors, what happens is the water that we get directly from God satisfies. But the water that we dump in the cistern always leaves us needing more. The spring always gives enough to share with others, but the cistern never has enough. You say, I still don't know what you're talking about. That's fine. Let's look at this. Let me put it this way. God built in a craving in you for intimacy, to know and be known. God put a need in you to know and to be known. And that craving manifests itself as a desire for intimacy. But we live in a world that's been polluted to the point that we don't recognize that what we actually need is intimacy. What we're actually longing for is intimacy. And instead, we say, I need sex. So, God has marriage over here. And instead of coming over here and enjoying the marriage that God designed to fulfill the need for intimacy, we scoop out what we want out of the marriage. I wanted a bucket, and I thought I'll go to Home Depot and get a bucket. And Brittany's like, no, you have to go to Hobby Lobby and get it. And we dump it in this hole. And see, what over there was fresh and was clean and was satisfying now gets contaminants in it. And we get what we think we need. We get what we're craving. But it doesn't satisfy. Because we've taken it away from the source. We say, okay, I'm hungry. So I need sustenance. So I go over and I get some sustenance that God has created for me. And I bring it over here and I dump it in my hole. So that I can enjoy some of that. But what we don't realize is that you realize that God didn't have to make us hungry? We don't have to eat. God could have made us without doing that. But He did that to drive us back to a provider. But instead, what we do is we just take what has been provided for us and we come over here separate from God and we worship that food. And what we take what was supposed to be sustenance that drove us back to our Creator and turn it into gluttony. That will only cause us pain. God built in a need for rest. So we feel that need for rest. So we go over here and we scoop out what we want that we think will fix this bucket of rest, that will fix our need for rest. And we walk over here and we dump it out and it turns into laziness. What was supposed to be a drive for us to spend time with our families, what was supposed to be a drive for us to spend time in worship, what was supposed to be something that drove us toward our Creator, turns into something that destroys careers, destroys lives, and destroys home. Because we took what God made for us out of the fountain and we dumped it into our hole in the ground so that it gets polluted. Fulfillment. God gave us a drive to work. He gave us a drive to work. He made us like Him so that we would work. He said, "Here's." He gave us dominion over all of creation and said, "Go see what happens," to bring joy to us, to display who we were supposed to be. But what do we do with work? We say, well, if I don't work more, if I don't work enough, if I don't have enough money, if I don't have enough of this, if I don't do that, then it's not going to, I can't. And we dump it in here. And what was supposed to be a drive to fulfill us, to make us more like the Creator, turns into greed, selfishness. Let's look at this woman. I'm going to make some stuff up because we don't know anything else about her. All right. But we look at this woman as a woman who had five husbands. But you know there was a time when she had no husbands. When she was a girl who was excited to get married and be married and stay married. And God put a drive in her, a craving in her for that. She wanted to have kids. She wanted to have intimacy. She wanted to know and be known and loved unconditionally. So she got married. But that didn't work out. So whatever happened, he kicked her to the curb, she left, we don't know. But what happens? She says, I'm going to try again. Because I still have this need to be loved and to be valued. And so I'm going to try again. So she gets married again. And it doesn't work out. But the need is still there. So she tries it again and it doesn't work out. And she tries it again, and it doesn't work out. And she tries it again, and it doesn't work out. And you want to know something? After you've had five husbands, it's hard to get somebody else to marry you. But she still has the craving. So what does she do? She takes whoever will come along that can offer her anything that will make her feel valued and known and loved. She takes whatever will come along because she has a craving that is inside her that is meant to drive her to create her Creator. But instead of going back to the source, instead of going back to the fountain of living waters, she just keeps drinking from this dirty hole in the ground that will only ever bring her pain and misery. So let's look at a couple verses out of this story again. now that we've talked about that. The woman said to her, "Sir, give me this water." See, she wanted to not come back to the well. She came at the hot part of the day because that's not the same time as all the other women would come. She would be able to do it alone. The women wouldn't gossip about what she was doing and where she was going. She wouldn't get the dirty looks. She came at noon. It's hot. She doesn't want to do it again. So she says, "Give me this water so I don't have to do this." And Jesus said, "Okay. I'll give you the water that sustains. I'll give you the water that will meet your needs. Go call your husband." The woman answered, "I have no husband." And Jesus said to her, "You have well said, 'I have no husband.' For you have had five husbands. You have tried this. You're thinking about the need of the moment. You're thinking about what can fix this problem that you have today. And you try that with water, and you're trying it with husbands too, and it's not working. I know you've had five husbands." And you know, our reaction to someone that has five husbands, that's had five husbands, like, "Yeah, you've had five husbands. I'm not going to stand too close to you. I don't want anybody to think anything about me because I'm that close to you." But you notice Jesus doesn't condemn her for this. He just has pity on her for this. It's not that Jesus doesn't think it's a sin. He knows what she's doing. But Jesus also recognizes that in her is a drive to something, and she keeps going to the wrong thing to have the need met. And He has compassion on her. He says, "You've had five husbands, and the one you're with now, you go to him to be known. You go to him to be loved. You go to him to be..." And he's not fixing it either. Back up a couple of verses. Jesus answered and said to her, "If you knew the gift of God and who it is that says to you, 'Give me a drink,' you would have asked him, and he would have given you living water." Now here's what I want to ask you. What have you been putting in your bucket? What is it that is your five husbands? Okay? What is it? What is the thing you keep going back to finally fill that empty place inside you that you know is meant to be filled, and you can't understand why what you keep putting in there will not fill that hole? What is it that you keep going back to? Maybe it's work. You worship your work, and you won't step away from it for anything. Because there is something inside of you that tells you you have to be fulfilled, and 60 hours a week is not fulfilling you. Maybe if you just get to 80 hours a week, it'll fulfill you. Maybe it's sex. You're looking for it wherever you can find it. There's a need in you, there's a craving in you, and you cannot figure out why it's never enough. And you're faithful to your spouse, but it doesn't seem like marriage is doing the job that it should be doing in you. It doesn't seem like it's enough. Maybe it's rest. You are just exhausted. And it doesn't seem like anything you do fixes it. You quit your job. You cut down hours at work. You don't take care of your responsibilities because you're just so tired. Maybe it's food. Maybe it's pleasure. Maybe it's entertainment. Whatever there is in you, whatever the thing is that's driving you past the point of reasonableness to sin, it comes down to one thing. You are dipping out of the fountain of waters and dumping it into the cistern, hoping that when you drink from that, it'll fix what's broken inside of you. Let me tell you something. never going to work. Hobby Lobby buckets do nobody any good. See, what you were meant for is the fountain of living waters. And yours may manifest differently than mine. Whatever your issue is, it's fixed right here. Whatever it is that's driving you to the point that you keep making the same mistake over and over and over and over and over. And you say, I know this is what I've got to do. My body is telling me that I've got to do this. My heart tells me I've got to do this. Your heart and your body are wrong. Your Creator says that if you knew who was asking you, you would ask not for temporary relief, but the living waters that will satisfy every craving that was built into you. Jesus is the answer for every problem you have. Every single one. Like, well, that's kind of a naive perspective. But you're kind of naive. Like, it's Jesus is seriously the answer for every problem that you have. How can you possibly say Jesus the answer is every problem that I have? Because your Creator made you to be fulfilled by Him. And He sent Jesus to be the one that brought you back to Him. So every issue you're dealing with, the solution is Jesus. Every single one of them. Your marriage isn't working. You just can't seem to get it together. You've tried, you've done counseling, you've done weekends together, but your marriage just isn't working. Have you tried Jesus? Have you tried going to God, surrendering yourself to Him, and doing whatever He says to do in your marriage? Have you tried laying down your life, husbands, for your wife, the way Jesus laid His life down for the church? Because that is the answer. Making your being more like Jesus. Food is your issue. Have you tried going to Jesus? Because God is your provider and your sustainer. And what you're doing to hurt yourself can be answered by Jesus. Your work is an issue because you find fulfillment in work, or you keep getting a little taste of fulfillment and you keep working harder because you don't know what to do with the kids and you don't know what to do with your wife and you don't know what to do at home, but you know what to do at work. Jesus is the answer because your work is going to go away. Your work is going to stop. And that little bit of a taste of fulfillment that you get from work, it's going to get harder and harder to find. Because what you're actually craving is your Creator to fill you and to fulfill you. Jesus answered and said to her, if you knew the gift of God, if you knew what turning your life completely over to Jesus would fix, you wouldn't hesitate. If you understood the problems that diving into a relationship with your Father would fix, you would not hesitate. But we don't. Because we see Jesus as our way into heaven. Right? That's what Jesus is for. He's to get me into heaven. He got me into heaven. He died for me. So I come to church. I'm here. I'm doing my thing. The kids are in Sunday school. And then I'm going to go do the real work of the week when I leave here. Right? But if you knew what God had made available to you, If you knew the satisfaction that God had made available to you. If you knew the problems that you think are about something else, but are really about the fact that you have not turned your life over to Jesus. If you knew what they would solve, you would not hesitate. But I'm here to tell you today that that same one who offered to fill the hole that she had spent all this time trying to fill in her life is available to you today. You say, my problems are way too big for a bunch of religious nonsense to fix. We have to have real work. If you knew the gift of God that was available to you today, and I'm not just talking to those of you who might not be believers. I'm not just talking to those of you who might not be saved, but I'm talking to all of you. Those of you who show up to church and serve on the supreme leader. What's the council called? The leadership council. I'm talking to you people. If you knew the gift of God that was waiting and available to you, you would dive into the fountain of living waters. And you would leave the buckets somewhere else. Jesus answered and said to her, if you knew the gift of God and who it is to ask you, give me a drink, you would have asked him and he would have given you living waters. And the woman said to him, sir, you have nothing to draw with and the well is deep. How can you fix my problem? Jesus is not even here. How is he going to fix my problem? Are you greater than all these other people who have offered to fix my problems for me? Are you greater than Tony Robbins? Are you greater than, I don't know, other motivational people? Are you greater than them? Jesus answered and said to her, you can keep drinking from your self-help books. You can keep going to work and filling it up. You can keep sleeping around or doing whatever it is that you're doing. But you will always, always, always thirst again. There's never a last time. There's never a point where there's enough. You will always have the craving. But whoever drinks of the water that I shall give him will never thirst. If you will dive into the fountain of living waters, if you will say, okay, my priority is not going to be my job. My priority is not even going to be my family. My priority is not going to be all these other things that I'm doing. But my priority, number one on the list, is making sure that I am as close to God as I can possibly be. Then you will be able to deal with those cravings. Because those needs will be met by the Father. Let me tell you something. You think I don't have time to make sure that I'm in my Bible and in prayer every day. I don't have time. I have things to do. I've got three kids. Listen, you don't have time not to. If you are not, fathers, if you are not diving into the fountain of living waters, if you are not in your Bible and in prayer, you are not being the father you need to be. I don't care how many baseball games you go to. I don't care how many Boy Scout meetings you go to. I don't care how many vacations you take. You are not being the father you need to be. Same thing with husbands, wives, mothers, employees. This has to come first. And if you knew the gift of God and what was being offered to you, you wouldn't hesitate. But we hesitate. Because we're like the woman and we say, how exactly is this going to fix my problem? How exactly is me spending time in my Bible and in prayer going to deal with these urges that I've been fighting since I was 13? Jesus answered and said, you've been trying this. You've been trying your way for a long, long time. And you are still thirsty. But if you will try what I'm telling you, you will not thirst again. The water that I shall give him will become a fountain of water springing up into everlasting life. And you say, oh, I'm still going to have the craving. You know what Jesus said right there? We take this, I'll never thirst again, and think, well, I'm never going to crave. I'm never going to have this problem. But what did Jesus say? If you will dive in and allow God to be first, and you'll make sure that you're drawing as close to Him as you can possibly do, then God will fill you up with a fountain of living water that will meet those needs. If you will draw near to Him, He will draw near to you. Well, you can decide what you're going to do today. What are you going to do today? Are you going to say, well, that's fine. You know, you had a couple of funny points there, but I have real problems that can't be met by reading my Bible and praying. You can say that. But to those of you who say that, I say this to you. You will thirst again. You're going to take that drink. You say, see, this fixed it for about 5 minutes. And you keep going deeper and farther. And it's going to get worse and worse and worse. But if you will try this, if you will try setting aside time with God every single day, and you will go to Him and you say, look, I don't understand how spending time in my Bible and praying and just turning everything over to You is going to fix this problem, but nothing else I've tried has worked. If you will instead turn to Him, God will fill you up with what you're really craving. You will find things out about yourself that you did not know. And you will experience life the way that it was supposed to be experienced. So what's it going to be? Is this just one of those sermons from pastors who don't know what they're talking about and don't understand what things are like in the real world? Are you going to listen to Jesus, who said that if you will turn to the fountain of living waters, you will never thirst again? I'm going to ask our musicians to come forward, and I'm going to pray for it, and I'm going to turn it over. I want to thank you for giving me the opportunity to be here and speak to you. And I want you to come back tonight, because I worked hard on my presentation, so if you could come back, that'd be super. But I want you to forget about all that for a minute. I don't know what you're dealing with. I don't know what you're struggling with. I don't know what's in your bucket. But I know you've got one. And when Jesus went to her, He didn't say, man, that's a lot of husbands. He didn't say, you didn't figure out how that worked the first time. He didn't pretend that she hadn't sinned. But He looked her in the eye and said, you're messing around with things that aren't working. But if you will come to Me, you can find what you've been looking for. And here's what I say to you. I don't know what's in your bucket, but Jesus does. And He doesn't mock you for your sin, but He recognizes that you are a slave to your sin. That your sin grabs a hold of you and won't let go. And He says this, if you will come to Me, if you'll turn it over to Me, if you'll draw near to Me, I'll deal with that. And that's what I want you to take away from today. Stand with me, please. Our Heavenly Father, we come before You and we thank You so much for the way that Jesus approached this woman. He didn't approach her with mockery, but with compassion. And I thank You for the fact that even though we put on a really good front, we look really nice today, and we've got our hair combed and all that stuff, we put on a really good front, but You know what's in the bucket. You know what we're dealing with. You know what nobody else knows about us. You know. And You also know the that the solution to our problems is not more money, a promotion, but the solution to our problems is to drink from the fountain of living waters. I ask now that if there's someone in the room that wants to take a step out toward you, but is scared, I ask that you give them courage. I ask if there's a doubter in the room, someone who thinks this is just a bunch of nonsense from somebody who doesn't live in the real world, I would ask you to remind them that you are the one that said these things, not me. And if there's someone in the room who's just refusing to let go of their bucket because they love their bucket and they've had their bucket their whole lives and all they know is their bucket, I ask that you would make their life difficult and uncomfortable. I ask that you would make it difficult to hold on to the bucket and that you would convict them and push them to a point that they're willing to let go. It's in Jesus' name I pray all these things, Lord. Amen.